And welcome to another edition of Spits and Suds. I'm Gavin Spittle of 105.3 The Fan. It's Stars Bruins from Boston Thursday night. And to preview this tilt from Odyssey's The Skate podcast, really, really good podcast from our sister station WEEI. We always love to have host Scott McLaughlin on the show. Great as always to chat, my friend. How are you?
I'm good, Gavin. Thanks for having me once again.
Yeah, man. Isn't it great to have hockey back?
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Especially up around these parts, we got Bruins and we got Celtics starting with their banner raising this week. Hasn't been very good with the Red Sox and Patriots, so I think Boston's kind of needed the winter sports teams to get going.
So Jeremy Swayman, the goaltender for the Bruins, signs on a Sunday, and I immediately tweet out, that's the market for Jake Oettinger. And shortly after that, I was really hoping that the Stars would be proactive, and they were, and they signed him to an 8 for $8.25. And Ullmark, who you saw a lot of, goes up to the Sens, and he gets an $8 million a year contract. I guess my question is now that it's settled as far as salary, I know that there were, you know, two sides were kind of going back and forth. Fan base was expressing their opinion. Have we settled down, or is it still resonating in any aspects?
No, I think it settled down a lot. I think it was one of those things where once it got signed, everyone just was kind of ready to move on, stop talking about it, start the season. I think for Swayman, it was probably a huge relief and just a weight off his shoulders to have all that behind him. Now he could just go out with his teammates, be with them every day, go play. You know, probably helped that there was, I mean, he signs it Sunday and the season starts Tuesday. So there's really no turnaround time for it to even like linger through a couple practices. It's like, all right, it's signed and now the season's here. So it's all back to playing hockey. So, you know, I don't think there's going to be any real lingering hard feelings. And it's one of those things where it's like, even if there is, Swayman doesn't have to negotiate a contract for 8 more years. So
yeah,
I think everyone will be just fine.
What was the fan base? Were they siding with one side or the other?
So that was really what was fascinating, is that most of the summer, I think they were by and large on Swayman's side and critical of the front office for not getting it done sooner, for trading away Ullmark before it was done. Some of the reports of what they're offering came across as kind of lowball offers. So they're accused of being cheap. And then Cam Neely, during their season opening press conference with, you know, one answer to a question, really kind of flipped it when he said he would have 64 million reasons to be playing. And so once word gets out that, you know, that the offer was that high, which I think everyone's in agreement, that's a legitimate real offer. That really kind of flipped the pressure to Swayman. And there were quite a few fans who started to turn on him. And I think he probably got more criticism during that week than he's gotten at any other point in his hockey playing career. And, you know, even his agent said after the fact, I think it was an interview with Pierre LeBrun, said that, you know, that comment, as much as he didn't like it, really sort of jump-started negotiations that had stalled because it forced everyone to start talking again and you know, finally hammer something out.
Was there a division among the fan base and media regarding keep Ullmark or keep Swayman? And was anybody surprised? I know a few people, when Ullmark signed for $8 million, said, you can thank Jeremy Swayman for that. It was, you know, I'm sure Jake Oettinger's sending his thanks as well, because those are two good comparables. Obviously, Ullmark and Swayman were teammates, and kind of Oettinger and Swayman are around the same age, and Oettinger's played more, but very comparable as well.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, I think, with Swayman, what was interesting was he was restricted free agent, was still 2 years out from unrestricted free agency. So, you know, for a while you thought, I was wondering, like, can he really help set the overall goalie market, or is it just going to be the restricted free agent market? And he kind of ended up doing both, because as you pointed out, like, he basically set the price for Oettinger and Ullmark. And I think, you know, I think the goalie market kind of needed that, because early in the summer you had UC Saros take 7.74 a year, yeah, in Nashville. And everyone kind of thought that was, a little bit of a hometown discount. So I'm sure guys didn't love that, because now that probably became the price that every team was like, well, that's what Saros got. What makes you think you should get more than him? So Swayman helped bring that up, at least what, 500,000 a year. We know Igor Shesterkin's gonna push the overall market a lot higher than
Yeah.
that, if whenever it is that he ends up signing a contract. So it does feel like the goalie union overall has been fighting back a bit, because prior to that, it had been several years since there had been any big goalie contracts. I think teams had gotten scared off by, whether it's Carey Price or even Bobrovsky.
Yep.
Obviously, before winning the cup, he had really been pretty inconsistent for a few years. So teams really weren't giving out these kind of big money long-term contracts.
Yeah, and Boston's kind of had a long, storied history with goaltenders and disagreements. I was kind of looking up some of that history. I mean, going back to Harry Sinden and with Jerry Cheevers and just some other aspects, it was kind of interesting. One of the aspects that I'm so interested about is Thursday night. And you just talked about this on your podcast, and you ran some analytics as far as the Bruins scoring and or lack of scoring to start the year.
So it's funny, because if you look at overall offensive numbers, they look pretty solid. They're actually 10th right now in the NHL in goals per game, but they are being completely carried by their fourth line of Johnny Beecher, Mark Kastelic, and Cole Koepke, who really out of nowhere just like bonded through training camp and preseason, went into opening night as the fourth line, and have completely dominated. Like they've like statistically have legitimately been the best or one of the best lines in the NHL. And at least as a line, they have been on the ice for 8 of the Bruins' 13 5-on-5 goals.
Wow.
And at least one of them has been out there for another two. So the you take now you can't take them out of it, but if you do, like the Bruins only have 3 5-on-5 goals from any other line. So far, they have none from their second line with Charlie Coyle and Brad Marchand. So they are really relying on that line, and they're just not generating enough chances elsewhere. They are way down in the ranks and shot attempts, shots on goal, scoring chances, all that stuff. They are at or near the bottom of the league. So they're kind of, the overall numbers don't look that bad, but the underlying numbers and the visuals of it look pretty ugly for the Bruins so far. They've just really struggled to generate offensive zone time and chances, and have we knew they were going to have question marks offensively going into the year, especially on the wing, but I think it's been more than most people were expecting so far.
Former Stars head coach, now Bruins head coach, Jim Montgomery, you guys just talked about in the podcast, and one of the questions you asked, is Monty's message getting through to veteran players? Why don't you dive into that a little bit?
Yeah, so it's interesting, because it's a lot of their top guys who just aren't playing up to their capabilities so far. David Pastrnak has had a couple good games, but has mostly been off to a slow start. His new line with Elias Lindholm and Pavel Zacha has really not clicked all that well yet. Brad Marchand does have 4 assists, but I would say has been fighting the puck at times. Now, he also had 3 off-season surgeries and missed a good chunk of training camp, so you probably cut him a little bit of slack. Charlie Coyle has had a really tough start to the year. Morgan Geekie started the year as their second line right wing and got off to such a bad start that he was a healthy scratch a couple games ago. Guys just in and out of the lineup all over. And in their most over the weekend when they were playing in Utah, Marchand committed a really bad turnover just inside the offensive blue line that led to what looked like the tying goal. The Bruins end up challenging 4 offsides, and it got called back. But Montgomery was laying into Marchand on the bench, like pushed his shoulder, was like right in his ear yelling. And you don't really see Montgomery get like that too often. So, to see him do it with the captain, obviously it caught everyone's attention. And it's a really interesting situation, because they have not gotten off to slow starts under Montgomery. And this I mean, look, they are still 500 teams, so it's not like they're off to like an awful
Yeah,
start,
still real early.
but right. But it does look worse than what they're used to. And for Montgomery, it's also a contract year and he doesn't have an extension yet. So like you do wonder about just the pressure he might be feeling, to make sure that this team starts to play the way that they're supposed to be playing. And yelling at Marshawn like that is obviously part of that. I do think the players still really like him and support him. And I think Marshawn's the type of guy who will take something like that the right way. And, he's always hard on everyone else himself. So I don't think there's an issue, but it's definitely something to monitor, especially without Montgomery being guaranteed beyond this year.
A lot of young kids for this Stars team. Scott, we have, Wyatt Johnston, Logan Stankoven, Maverick Bourque. You guys have 20-year-old Matt Patra, and currently, I believe, playing third line
Yep.
minutes. Is it too early to anoint Patra? I know he looked really good last year and then got injured. But at the same time, would he be better served spending a little bit more time in the minors, or do you think he's ready?
I think he's ready. So he had his season ended late January last year. He had season-ending shoulder injury and surgery. So his offseason was also kind of a little bit messed up, but he did come into camp healthy. He was awesome in preseason. And then unfortunately suffered another injury the final week of preseason. So he missed the first couple games this year. And when he got back in the lineup, his first game back, he was awesome. He was the best player on the ice. And you're like, wow, like it's just amazing that this kid, 20 years old, he hasn't played a game in 9 months or something at that point, and he comes right back and plays like that. And then he's kind of had a couple up and down games since, and he's been fighting the puck a little bit. So I think he's going to be fine. I don't think they're going to send him down because I think their middle six needs him, honestly. He just brings a level of creativity and playmaking and some speed that is otherwise missing from that group. So it's probably going to take him a little while to really find his game on a more consistent basis as he gets fully back up to speed, but I think he's going to be okay. I think he's going to be an important part of this team.
So it's not an original six coming in, my friend, but it is the Dallas Stars Western Conference Finals, and a real good run from this Stars team. Does the fan base get excited? I know, like, for instance, I know that Swayman and Ottinger both want in on the Nations Four situation. So I know they want to most likely back up Connor Hellebuck. So I think there's a little extra juice. I'll also say there's a little extra juice. Jake Ottinger admits he loves to play in Boston because he played at Boston University. So familiarity with the area, the ice, playing in multiple bean pots. So from a Bruins standpoint, what are your thoughts on this Stars team and coming in? And does the fan base get excited, or is it not enough knowledge about this Dallas team yet?
So I think there'll be a little bit of excitement because I think fans around here are smart enough to know the Stars are good and they know that they've had some deep runs. But it's probably just that kind of excitement from it's a good team that they're playing. But it there's obviously like there's no sort of rivalry connection. Like I think Bruins fans thrive off hate a lot.
Yeah.
So the teams that they have a reason to really dislike, like the Florida Panthers or the Maple Leafs or the Lightning, Canadians, like any of those teams, they really kind of get people amped up. So it's probably more, I don't know, like a respectful excitement where it's just they know they have a good team coming in. But when I think of like teams out west that bring excitement, it's definitely Vegas because of Bruce Cassidy. That
Sure.
always has like extra storylines. Edmonton, people just get excited over McDavid. So Vancouver, there's still a little bit of that rivalry from even though like all the players except Marchand are gone, there's still that city rivalry from 2011, believe it or not. Like I think people still kind of and now this year there's a ton of overlap between former Bruins and former Canucks that switch teams. So like that's always an interesting one. So I think Dallas is definitely like a tier below that, but there's definitely an awareness that this is a really good team coming in.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I'll also add that I don't know if Bruins fans were surprised at the Utah loss, but I had this Utah team kind of fringe playoffs.
Same. Yeah.
And it was really, I mean, tough for Bruins fans, but I will say, reading the comments from Michael Kesselring, who I'm a big fan of, he's a big defenseman. I talked about him last year. I was hoping that the Stars could acquire him at the trade deadline. I'm not going to complain about acquiring Chris Tanev, but I thought Kesselring is a real, real nice piece. So for the New Hampshire native to score and be excited, you know, I thought that was really cool as well. So it's interesting because I don't know if a lot of people, as we kind of look around the league, know about Utah yet. And I don't know if you agree, Scott. I've always had this thing where when situations change for the better for a team and you don't know what hotel you're going to stay at next, and then you go to a Utah with deep pockets, new arena, you go from playing to 6,000 people to a packed arena, everyone loves you. I think that adrenaline carries.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think just like positive vibes can just go a long way for a team. And Utah clearly has it right now, whereas for a couple of years, those guys who were there in Arizona, which was obviously a lot of that team, you know, just had to deal with questions about how long are they going to be there? Are they moving? Where, you know, what's their home arena situation? All, you know, questions about playing in a college rink. And, you know, like at times it almost didn't even feel like they were like a real NHL team. And now you get into, you know, a whole new city situation, all of it. And like, I even think of just like, just think about like Clayton Keller, the change, another BU guy, like think about the change for him, where I think it was last year, maybe the year before, where, you know, he had a, I think a family member in an interview sort of saying something that alluded to like me, he might want out. He doesn't really want to deal with everything. And now he's the captain. He's the first captain in the history of the Utah Hockey Club. And it's like that. I just feel like it changed the buy-in for so many of those guys, where they now really feel like they have a home where they know they're going to be. And they play an exciting brand of hockey. I mean, they were definitely faster than the Bruins. They were forechecking hard. Like, they were giving the Bruins a lot of issues in that game where the Bruins just could not break out cleanly. And I think they're going to do that to a lot of teams.
Yeah, the other one that's just amazing is Winnipeg. You just never know what's going to happen. They lose, you know him well, Rick Bonus, and, you know, pick up a new coach, and all of a sudden, Winnipeg's out of the gates fast. So it's a really fascinating season. Also wanted to throw your way, we talk about Ottinger having a little extra juice on Thursday night. Colin Blackwell grew up in North Andover, went to St. John's Prep, graduated from Harvard, so I know he's excited to be on that ice as well.
Yeah, and a great story.
Like, yeah,
I will always root for Colin Blackwell.
Me too.
Because he's fought through so much in his career where it was really almost ended by concussion issues that he dealt with in college and then in the pros. So, you know, good kid, good family. Like, he's very easy to root for. He's someone who's been on Bruins fans' radars a lot, where I think it feels like every time he's been available, either as a free agent or trade, people are like, should the Bruins go get him? You know, he could be a good fourth line depth piece, and it's never really panned out. And I don't know if he's quite fit the style of what the Bruins have been trying to do, you know, in their bottom six. But yeah, definitely, you know, always good to see him back in Boston.
Yeah, all right. Let's before we let you go, let's lay it out for the Stars to win on Thursday night. What can they take advantage of from this Bruins team?
Well, really, if you just shut down their offense, like just do what other teams have been doing, which is play solid defense and force the Bruins to really work for their scoring chances. Because so far this year, the Bruins outside of that fourth line have not done enough to earn those chances. So don't give them the chances, you know, don't make mistakes that hand them opportunities, force them to work hard for them. Because right now the Bruins only have one line that's doing that work. It's odd to say like you have to game plan for a fourth line, but that's really the only one on the Bruins right now that is consistently generating chances. And they're just doing it through sheer hard work and kind of straight line, physical forechecking type of game. So, you know, be aware of them and then force other lines to work hard because they aren't right now.
It's the Skate Podcast. I encourage all Spits and Suds listeners to check it out. And Scott McLaughlin's a big piece of that, my friend. Thank you so much for joining us today for this Stars Bruins preview. Should be a nice tilt at the Garden.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
And that's going to do it for another edition of Spits and Suds on 105.3 The Fan. I'm Gavin Spittle. Have a great day, everyone.